from Mount Fuji in Japan.
Welcome
to the GCN show.
Coming up this week, Remco Evenepoel has revealed his astonishing power numbers, which have left fans asking why he's not winning even more. Now, we think we might know why. We will explain how it relates to you as well.
We've also got an update on Lael Wilcox's round-the-world record attempt, a new team that's aiming to find a North American Tour de France winner within a decade, Chris Froome backpedalling, and the smelliest end-of-show nugget ever. This week in the world of cycling, we learnt that Liam Slok's first ever pro victory was spectacular.
Here he is celebrating.
Here he is in disbelief.
Here he is crapping himself.
And here he is crossing the finish line.
Now, thankfully for Slok, he and his bike still crossed that finish line ahead of everyone else. So he got to stand slightly embarrassed on the winner's podium.
Well done to Liam. That is absolutely legendary.
Oh, it is, yeah.
We also learned this week that Justin Bieber is feeling the effects of bike price inflation too. Apparently last week he had to buy a second-hand bike to ride around LA.
Poor guy. Mm. And he also couldn't stretch for better headgear either, by the look of it. Presumably that was something he found in a thrift store as well.
Presumably, yeah. And finally, take a look at this. Not an overly serious commuter on a public hire bike, but Tobias Dalhaus racing at the new City of London Nocturne race last weekend with the same organisers as the legendary Smithfield Nocturne from back in the day.
Yeah, now the UCI unfortunately disqualified him just after that because his bike contravened the rules about how big a front basket could be.
You are joking.
Yes, I am.
Okay, good, don't worry. He won the Voi bike race and competed again in the pro race later on that evening.
Yeah, and then finally we learned that Remco Evenepoel's threshold power is 425 watts. Now, we know this not because he forgot to hide his power on Strava, because he told us on a YouTube video he uploaded to his channel last week.
Or at least his coach at Red Bull Bora Hansgrohe, Dan Lorang, told us. The video was actually made back in March at the team's altitude training camp in Tenerife. In it, Evenepoel was doing some testing on a climb, which is where the number was revealed.
Now, a 425 watt FTP is high, very high, but perhaps not all that surprising when you consider that Evenepoel is a multi-time world time trial champion, Olympic champion twice over, and a Grand Tour stage winner. At an estimated weight, we should say, of 64 kilos at that point in the season. So that would put his FTP at what? 6.65 watts
around
per kilo.
Around that, yeah. Not just a Grand Tour stage winner either. Grand Tour winner.
Sorry, yeah. Yeah, it was Vuelta, wasn't it?
You forgot about the Vuelta, didn't you?
I mean, yeah, it's not my race, Dan. You know, but I appreciate it's still a Grand Tour.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the point. That is an enormous amount of power it to have is,
yeah.
under the hood, isn't it?
I would quite like that sort of power, even though I'm 12 kilograms heavier. And frankly, I'd have liked that power when I was 8 kilos heavier and I was still a pro.
Wouldn't we all, Si?
Yes.
Now, when social media started chatting about those numbers, most people seem to be expressing their surprise that he isn't getting even better results than he already has.
Yeah, even better than the 74 wins that he's had with, as we've already mentioned, multiple world championship titles, two Olympic titles, the Vuelta and the third place at the Tour.
Yeah, even better than that is expected now. I think the main point was that he should, with his power and with his weight, be a little bit more competitive against the likes of Pogacar and Vingegaard in the big stage races.
Yeah, now, Evenepoel has beaten Vingegaard twice in stage races, hasn't he? At the 2020 Tour of Poland, which Evenepoel won, and then the 2022 Basque Country. Yeah, however, this was before Vingegaard had won a Grand Tour. Mm. And we should also point out that Evenepoel has never beaten Pogacar in a stage
no,
race.
No, although not too many people have, to be no. fair to him. Believe it or not, they've only started four stage races together, Pogacar and Evenepoel. Anyway, the fact remains that at the biggest races in the world, Evenepoel is not challenging either of them currently, even though his power numbers suggest that he should be.
So, why is that? Why is his monumentally big engine just not enough?
Well, it's not because Pogacar is more powerful, is it? Because he might not be by much. But the best reason we can think of to explain it is durability.
Yes.
So the more I've participated in the sport and watched it, the more I'm realising just how important durability is. Basically, the ability to produce your best numbers deep into a five-hour mountain stage and quite often deep into a three-week race. And for me, it's the latter rather than the former that Evenepoel can struggle with. So in one-day races, when he's fresh, he's phenomenal most of the time, isn't he? His troubles seem to occur when there's a lot of fatigue already in the legs. That's when the wheels have tended to fall off for him in stage races over the past couple of seasons.
Yeah, I think you made this comparison on yesterday's Racing News show, didn't you? But Evenepoel's results in stage races versus his new teammate, Florin Lipovic, are an interesting and quite illuminating comparison, aren't they? So Evenepoel hasn't finished on the podium of a World Tour level stage race since the 2024 Tour de France. In that time, Lipovic has finished on six World Tour podiums.
Astonishing, really, isn't it? And Lipovic isn't the type of rider who seems to be able to put in those sort of otherworldly performances. He's just a very fast, sort of steady Eddie, Lipovic, isn't he?
I mean, it's quite a harsh description for somebody that podiumed at the Tour de France last year, isn't it?
I know, and I do feel a little bit bad for saying it, but you know what I mean. He's an amazing rider, but you just can't imagine him putting in a monster attack that nobody else can follow. But he is always there, never really has a bad day, and then when he does, he does not lose big chunks of time.
No. Well, yes. I mean, he's not a prolific winner, is he?
No.
He's had three in his career versus 74 for Evenepoel.
It is quite a big difference, even if Lipovic's career did start a little bit later. Now, resistance to fatigue is something that plays a role in all levels of cycling, and it's something I spent more and more time thinking about since I've gotten back on the bike side a couple of years ago.
Is that because you're really tired all the time? You're wondering how you can get stronger.
Yeah, I've got no resistance to any fatigue. No, if I'm honest, I'm a little bit disappointed with where my FTP is right now. I honestly thought, possibly slightly arrogantly actually, that with the amount of training I've done over the past 18 months or 2 years, it would be higher than it currently is and where it's got to.
Okay, but what do you reckon it is then?
I think it's around about 280 watts and okay. I thought I'd get to 300 at least. Actually. However, I find that I am able to hold quite a high percentage of my FTP for quite a long time. So, for example, at 7 Gravel, the race we did in Australia, we've not said much about.
Yeah.
My normalised power is 248 watts for close to 5 hours, which is 89% of my FTP.
Wow, crikey. I mean, did I know what percentage I rode the race at?
Well, I do, Si, because I had a look at your Strava and I've done some calculations.
Right.
Your normalised power was 300 watts,
yeah.
And your FTP is, or at least was, 360 watts,
okay.
From what you told me. So that's 83% as a percentage. For less time as well, because you were half an hour quicker.
Are you trying to take that as a win?
Absolutely. You've got to take the wins when they come these days, Si, okay. As you well know. And now, my point is, I think I'm probably beating some riders who've got a high FTP for the same weight as me, because I've got a better resistance to fatigue. I guess the next question then is whether durability as an athlete is nature or nurture, i.e. is it trained or trainable, or is it in your genes?
I mean, there is the fact that you rode the Tour de France.
Mm.
That might have helped a little bit.
Might have helped, yeah.
You know, so Ollie, Alex and I were in Sweden at the weekend, and we actually were talking about your performance at 7 Gravel and saying how genuinely impressive it was.
Oh, really?
Because, like, I mean, it really was. And, you know, whilst I'm not saying I think your FTP should be 300, given what you've done, what you did was, like, absolutely bonkers. So it would help to explain that performance.
Well, I think some people watching this might think, yeah, I'm sure he could do 300 watts for an hour if push came to shove. But remember that time trial I did last year off the back of quite a lot of training for Manchester to London?
That was awful, terrible.
I set off at like 3:10, 3:20. I think I should be able to do that for 20 minutes. I think I averaged 290 by the end of 20 minutes. So therefore, FTP about 280 or 270 even at that point. Anyway.
The other thing about 7 Gravel that's remarkable is that you're race nutrition consisted of 3 water bottles that someone had found off a floor and some cookies. Anyway, now, back to the point. From what I've read previously, resistance to fatigue is very trainable.
Mm.
So much more so perhaps than something like peak sprint power, which is probably governed by genetics. So your ability to ride at a high percentage of FTP for a long time is quite likely down to the years of high-volume training and racing that you've done in the past.
Yeah, very, very probably.
Probably the 3 Grand Tours that you rode and all of that kind of stuff.
Yes, I do agree. Although if I think back to the first ever long road races I did, the longer they were, the better I seemed to feel. So that was back when I was about 18 years old, and not with a huge amount of training volume up to that point, I'd say. I often felt like I was struggling to keep the pace in the first hour or so, but then felt like I sort of came good about an hour or two into it. And in hindsight, I think it was probably others getting tired, obviously, rather than me getting more powerful, miraculously, after an hour. What's your resistance to fatigue been like in your years riding on the road and racing on the road?
Well, so like you, I started as a mountain biker, doing races that were, well, 2 hours, a little bit more back then, weren't they? The elite races. They've got easier now.
They're much easier.
Much easier. They're only like an hour and a quarter. I could do that. But no, the thing I struggle with, right, is, and it's probably why a lot of people still debate whether durability is a thing, is that when I think back, and I, unlike you, I would say my durability was poor. But then I also know that I didn't do that many training rides that were longer than, well, not many longer than five, not many that longer than four, really. So I didn't do super long stuff. And then in mountain biking, where I'd also say my durability wasn't as good, you know, was I just 19 years old and racing way above my threshold for the first hour and a half and dying on my ass? Yeah, so it's really hard to separate, isn't it? And it's why when Connor interviewed Andy Coggan about FTP, he disputed durability because he thought it was all down to FTP. But if I was pushed to answer, which I suppose is what everyone's waiting for, because I've been blathering on for several minutes now, I probably would say that, unlike you, I feel like my durability is not as good.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
I guess other people at home watching this are always going to want to know how you go about increasing your resistance to fatigue if you've only got, say, 6 hours a week to train around other commitments.
Yeah. Well, I mean, firstly, you need to work out whether or not you actually need to bother trying to increase your durability.
Yeah.
If you're struggling to keep up with your mates...
Well, I was better off letting the wheel go there deliberately.
...to the end of rides, or you find that the last climb of the day is always 1-2 minutes. Durability is actually probably not the answer, is it? Like I've just said, improving your FTP is likely to be the answer. Just spending a bit more time on your bike will be the answer.
In fact, that will probably make more difference to most people if you want to improve, won't it? Get fitter or go longer. And that includes most races too. So time trials, crit races... cyclocross races?
Yeah, those events, they're just not long enough, are they, to push your endurance limits?
No, that must be why I didn't win in that race that we did the other night, Si.
Well, that and Alex didn't wait for you, did he?
You didn't wait either, Si.
Well, I mean, I asked my road captain, who I was in the break with, and he just told me to crack on.
Yeah, we saw that in the video, and I saw it for the first time in the video as well, but whatever.
Well, back to my point, though. I think I was making a point. If you want to do Grand Fondos, like the Fred Witten that Ollie enjoys doing so much, well, to be fair, I did it and really enjoyed it as well, or gravel racing, like Seven Gravel, then absolutely, I think, building up your durability is going to pay dividends, right? So anything over 3 hours is going to need endurance work, isn't it? And then I think where that durability element comes in, the resistance to fatigue, whatever you want to call it, I think that's when... the harder the race is, the more it plays a part.
I'd say so as well.
Partly why I think most people, it's not a thing for, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, you're right. But I guess for the people that do want to have that durability, often they don't have enough time to do enough in zone two, which is what the pros do. So I guess in that instance, what you want to do is a lot more sweet spot and zone three work, especially towards the end of the rise that you do. And then trying to find the... I just said do four times in a row.
You did,
six now. And then trying to find time back-to-back long rides, maybe one weekend a month, for example.
Yes. Yeah, definitely back-weighting like stuff to the end of your rides.
Yeah.
Even stuff like over-geared thing, like intervals.
At
the end of rides,
Simon
that can be pretty good.
Been to me as well.
Yeah, definitely will go a long way to boosting endurance. And a lot of people also say, like Ollie Bridgewood, and I think you as well, and me too, to be fair, gym work helps build durability. But just remember that actually just going to the gym can't replace bike riding.
If you do some riding.
You will still need to do some bike riding.
I will do some bike riding, yeah. Anyway, we should draw this back round to Remco Evenepoel. He will undoubtedly already be doing long rides, of course, and gym sessions and everything in between. So you do wonder with him whether it is genetics.
Yeah, maybe there is a point at which someone so superhuman as Evenepoel, so incredible, actually begins to run out of talent.
Sounds a bit odd describing a double Olympic champion Grand Tour winner as running out of talent. But maybe it's his Achilles heel.
I mean, that's the same thing, essentially, isn't it? Yeah. But yeah.
I've also got another theory, actually, about Remco Evenepoel, which is that his mental durability is not as strong as some of his rivals.
Really?
Yeah. Well, two things, really. I think he's someone that lets his emotions get the better of him when he's racing. We've seen that multiple times in races, haven't we? But I also have a theory that he's been so used to winning and dishing out the pain to others that he struggles a little bit mentally when he's suffering at the hand of others. So from his second ever UCI race as a junior, he just went on this massive winning spree. And that kind of carried on when he turned pro at 18.
That is bonkers, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, is it hard to imagine what that actually must feel like?
Well, for us, yeah, absolutely. Although, of course, you had that famous win a couple of weeks ago, didn't you?
Yeah, I'm really dishing out the pain these days.
Unless you're in a two-up break with Peyton, that was a proper pain phase you had on there. So,
my God,
I don't think you were dishing out the pain to him.
No, I really wasn't. I mean, there's many reasons why not on that particular day. But yeah, no, that was absolutely brutal. And do you know what, though? I think one thing that my cycling has taught me over the years is how to suffer.
Mm.
I mean, I think I've had it dished out to me far more times than I've ever dished it out.
I think I've run out of suffer credits. It's part of my excuse for not suffering too much at the moment.
Right. Well, anyway, let us know your experiences with all of this. Are you a high-octane rider who beats most people on shorter races, but comes unstuck when things get a little bit longer?
Or vice versa? Do you struggle with the shorter events, but come into your own once you're a few hours in? Let us know in the comment section down below this video. Right, just before we move on, we wanted to let you know we've added an extra print to our collection. Whatever escaped your attention, there's quite a big race for 3 weeks coming up in France fairly soon.
Yeah, now the new print is so hot off the press that we don't have one here.
We don't, no.
No, but hopefully you'll be seeing what it looks like on screen now. Now, keep your eyes out for some more special edition products that will be on their way as well.
If you would like to make a purchase, you know what to do, but we'll remind you anyway. Head to shop.globalcyclingnetwork.com or scan the QR code that's on the screen now. Thanks for the support if you choose to give it.
You know how you say, just before we move on, we're going to talk about this? You know, technically that means we've moved on, don't you? Just before we move on, I'm going to move on to this.
Right. Crikey. I should remember that.
Yeah.
And now it's time for cycling shorts.
Moving on now to cycling shorts.
And before we move on.
We will start with some big news from Zwift. They announced last week that they are backing a new junior talent program based in North America with the specific aim of winning the Tour de France in 10 years.
Yeah, they've got both a men's and women's squad, so they've doubled their chances straight off the bat.
Smart move.
But jokes aside, this is a great development.
Yeah, we really think it is. Canyon have also got involved, and clothing brand Pedal Mafia. But crucially, this doesn't rely solely on corporate funding for long-term security. So Zwift founder Eric Min has stressed, in his words, that junior development cannot be a two-year experiment. It has to be a generational commitment. And so has established a foundation to back the squad for the long term.
That's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Alpecin Premier Tech, Fenix Premier Tech and Canyon SRAM teams will also be involved in helping graduates into the pro peloton.
Yeah. That's proper cool, isn't it? Oh,
I love that, yeah.
Yeah, great stuff.
Imagine that opportunity as a junior. Amazing.
Oh, I know, yeah. Right. Following on from last week's big story about Lael Wilcox embarking on her round-the-world record-breaking mission.
Yep, as we film this, she's covered 1,900 miles, which is over 3,000 kilometres, and is both ahead of schedule and also behind.
Yes.
Her tracker is showing she's ahead of Mark Beaumont's average speed, which worked out at 9.6 miles per hour over the course of the 78 days, including stoppages. Lael is at 9.67.
Ooh. However, her daily average has been just 383 kilometres, as opposed to her target of 386. Mm.
Very early days yet, though. By the time you watch this, she'll have flown from Nova Scotia to Portugal to start the second leg of her trip through Europe.
Yeah, that's a big leg, that one, as well. She's taken the scenic route through Europe, I believe. Now, the other ultra-endurance record that we mentioned last week is the 6,000-kilometre south-to-north crossing of Europe, which is being tackled by Sarah Ruggins.
And she is absolutely flying along. Average speed of 11.6 miles per hour.
Including stoppages.
Yeah, or 18.57 k's per hour, riding 450 k's a day and on track to break the record by 4 days, roughly.
Ouchie. And bear in mind that the record, I think, is 16 days.
It's quite a chunk.
That's quite a smashing. Right, now, speaking of ultra-endurance, as we are, how about these three Argentinian football fans who cycled 11,000 miles from their home to the opening match of Argentina's World Cup campaign in Kansas City?
That's the Kansas City, which is not in Kansas, but rather Missouri, I think, isn't
it? Yeah.
It took them 9 months, and it meant crossing the Andes through Bolivia, Peru, and Colombia.
Yeah, that is some punchy
riding. A lot of riding, yeah.
Plus, they gave up their jobs to do it.
Well, I'd imagine so, in 9 months.
Yeah, good point. It's quite a commitment. But anyway, on arrival, which is great, they were given free tickets to the match. So yeah. That was a cheeky little bonus, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hopefully Argentina get a win as well, because I think it's on Wednesday this week.
Is it? Well, they'll then have quite a job to ride the 500 miles from Kansas City to Dallas Stadium, which is would be in time for their second match, which I think is 5 days later.
Yeah, doable. I mean, they should be pretty well trained.
True.
Right now, shouldn't they?
Yes.
Unlike this man, four-time Tour de France winner, Chris Froome. Although his durability should actually be quite good.
I expect so, yeah.
Given that he not only rode the Tour de France, he won it four times.
He's done quite a lot of riding for him.
Anyway, while the world waits for official confirmation of his retirement from cycling, he has busied himself with riding a Gran Fondo with Alejandro Valverde, and now he's teaming up with other former pros, Jakob Fuglsang and Pipo Pizzato, to take part in a charity race on aqua bikes across the Mediterranean.
Aqua bikes like the ones Ollie rode at Eurobike many years ago.
You mean this one?
Yes, I mean that one.
I actually don't know, but that clip will never get old.
No. Should we watch it again?
Yes.
Brilliant. Right, we've got a bit of tech news for you now. After the avalanche of new bikes that were teased at the race formerly known as the Dauphiné, which incidentally turned into a bit of a cracker, including a fabulous final weekend for Isaac Del Toro as he took two stage wins and clinched the overall.
Yes, for following on from the avalanche of tech, this week it's less sexy. Less sexy new bike and more tech you didn't know you needed, because here is a tuned mass damper.
What is a tuned mass damper? I hear you asking at home. Well, it's a device that uses a weight to dampen vibrations, commonly found in skyscrapers, bridges, and F1 cars. However, bike brand Rimpact launched a system that became popular on downhill mountain bikes and now have one to mount to the front of your forks on your gravel bike.
Yes. They say that it reduces harsh feedback through the handlebars. Now, I have never tried one, so I don't know. But I can't help, Dan, but think that if you're going to add weight to your bike to reduce feedback to your handlebars, you might as well go for tyres first and then suspension second. But I haven't tried it.
No, you did mention that.
I haven't tried it.
Well, until you tried it, don't pass comments on.
All right.
If you're interested at home, it's £230. Sticking with money, the New York Parks and Trails Authority have just published some research to show that the Empire State Trail, which is a 750-mile route through the state and predominantly off-road, brings in almost $2 billion a year.
That is a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
Isn't it? But they say there are 9.7 million visits per year to the trail, with an average spend of $30 per person per day, and overnight visitors spend on average $545.
Well, what sort of message can we take from that then, Si? Build more trails.
That's it. Well, and also, careful like stopping at cafes, because that clearly racks up, doesn't it?
That's the tips.
Yeah, exactly. Right, here in the UK, though, some of the best long-distance trails we have are basically, well, not just basically, they are GPS routes, aren't they, that use existing paths and byways. And that's going to be the best value of all. You don't even have to build anything. Yeah. And Cycling UK, who are the charity that have made kind of the best ones, like King Alfred's Way, estimate that the average person spends on something like the King Alfred's Way, the best of them all, about £80 a day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot.
Well, I think that's including like people overnighting. There aren't many idiots that do it in a day.
No, true. No, true. Now, here is the competition that we promised you. So our mates at G-Technic, who make bike cleaning products to not only satisfy, but actually excite Ollie Bridge, are giving some stuff away.
They are, yeah. They're into chemistry as much as he is.
Well, almost, I would say. Anyway, up for grabs is the Ultimate Care Kit, which includes their special cleaner, degreaser, ceramic coating, detailing brushes, and much, much more besides.
Well, the much, much more includes cleaning cloths that are so next level that I actually pre-wash my bike just so that the wash doesn't get too filthy.
Nice. Yeah, well, having seen the state that you can get your bikes into, I think that is probably quite a good idea. So
I mean, you can't not get muddy if you're racing cyclocross, can you? But yeah, I pre-wash before I get my mitt involved. Right, anyway, there is a link in the description. click on that and it will take you through to the competition page, which will give you all the details that you need to know.
Including the fact that entries close at 10 a.m. BST Friday the 26th of June, and winners are going to be announced on a GZN show from Tuesday the 30th of June. Put that caveat in there because we've forgotten a couple of times. Just before we move on, it's time for hack forward slash bodge of the week now. Our first one this week comes in from Stephen, wheel wall hanger. Now, details are scarce in the description, but Stephen says, to save space in my studio apartment, I made these wall hangers for my spare wheels.
And the wall hanger looks like a nut with... what are we thinking that is on top? Is that 3D printed around it?
He mentions nothing about 3D
printed. It doesn't even look 3D printed.
My experience with people who 3D print is that they tell you they 3D print.
A bit like vegans. How do you know that someone's got a 3D printer? They'll tell you about it. Can I just, you said, I like vegans and 3D printers, by the way. I don't really know what to make of this. I don't understand it, but ultimately, if your wheel gets stuck to your wall, then I'm here for it.
I am as well. I think that looks incredibly neat. We don't know how it works or if it works, but it looks like it does, so it's a hack from me.
There we go. Yeah, a hack from me as well. Thomas Hayward has sent this one in. Bike crash wrecked brake disc hack. So this sounds awful. I was out at my local cycling club. We were in a peloton of about 10 riders. 22 Ks in, there was an unexpected crash. The worst kind, and four of us went down.
Do you reckon unexpected is worse than expected? I'm not sure I agree with that.
I mean, it's the only kind of crash, isn't it, really? Thomas, anyway, then said his front disc brake rotor was so badly bent, it wouldn't go through his caliper. So him and his clubmates took his brake caliper off and strapped it to his front fork with a cable tie to get him home. I mean, if it gets you home...
Yeah, it's a roadside hack.
It's got to be a roadside hack. I mean, it makes me feel so incredibly nervous, Dan, the thought of a disc brake caliper sort of fairly securely fastened to your front fork, but essentially flapping around, because if that got stuck in your wheel...
Yeah, look, does look like quite a sturdy zip tie, doesn't it?
It does.
So well, it's a roadside hack, isn't it?
It is a hack. It got you home. Can't say that's fine. Yeah.
Ed Druitt, TPU tyre repair. I hate throwing away tubes and have always repaired my butyl and latex ones in the past. Since changes to TPU tubes, I've had mixed success with patches similar to other people's reports online. After some of the standard YouTube Google rabbit hole, I came up with a new solution with inspiration from others to use a lighter or gas stove to melt a small piece of old TPU tube and dabbing the puncture site with it. I'm not sure how big a hole can be patched, but the common thorn prick and snake bite punctures are easily repaired. Best part about it is it's practically an instant and permanent fix. So if you take a lighter and a very small amount of tube on a ride, you can patch on a ride if need be. I expect 5 centimetres of tube would mend dozens of punctures.
That's absolutely bonkers, isn't
it? I know, that's amazing. If that works, which I presume it does, I mean...
It'd be a bold thing to write in to Hacklebotch with something that's just a lie.
I have no reason to believe that Ed is lying through any of this. So in that case, that is a huge hack, one which we must get them the tech boys to try.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, I think Alex will be dead excited at this.
I know, can't wait to tell him.
I know. Go on, you tell him, you found it, that's fine. Right, last up, we got this one from Mike B. This is a head unit mount, Mike says. I have a Hammerhead Karoo 1 head unit. I like the display, but its one downside is its weight combined with the rough Devon roads, Devon being a county here in England. The constant jarring broke one of the ears off the mounting. Since spares are no longer available, I filed a channel in the original mount and made a metal insert from a mending bracket. Oh, this is pretty impressive, isn't it? I thought I'd solved the problem, but soon found that the plastic inserts in the out front mounted bracket had now become the weak link. So I looked for metal inserts, but couldn't find any. So I made one.
Oh my goodness.
I modified a brass plumbing fitting and cut a circle from an old brass letterbox, which I soldered into place for the base. So far, the setup has been rock solid, despite broken road surfaces and potholes.
Well, I mean, it looks rock solid, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Visibly.
Is it noisy? I mean, I assume one of the advantages of plastic is that it's pretty quiet.
It doesn't rattle as much.
Well, yeah.
It's either a very snug fit or it is a bit rattly. Let us know. I guess you could just add some rubber over the top, couldn't you?
Yeah, I'm impressed, Mike. I think that's a hack.
Always safe for doing that. That's a hack from me as well. Was that four hacks this week? Yeah. Yeah, I think it was, but we didn't know whether the first one worked, so might be a bod, we don't really know. Yeah. Anyway, you can get involved in this part of the show by going to globalcyclingnetwork.com/uploader.
Took me a while to move on from your rubber joke there. Hey, it's time now for Caption Competition, that part of the show where you get a chance to get your hands on a coveted GCN Camelback water bottle. All you got to do is put a witty caption in the comment section down below that relates to a photo we'll give you in just 1 second after the results from last week.
Last week's photo was this one of Filippo Ganna and Connor Swift at the Giro d'Italia with a chef running alongside them with a couple of plastic hands and a saucepan. Our winner this week is Yelly9880, who put, the chef says, need some more souplesse?
I think he needs an Italian accent, the chef.
Oh, I can't do accent.
Needs some more souplesse.
Yeah, very good.
Thanks. I think that's great. I think that's an absolute banger. Yeah, souplesse, by the way, for those that don't speak like, well, it's fairly archaic cycling.
I was going to say, I think if you've got in cycling the last 15 years, you've probably never heard the word souplesse.
No, souplesse kind of refers to ease of movement. Smooth pedaling stroke, isn't it? They ride with souplesse.
Yeah, rather than mashing.
Yeah, and not literally meaning soup-less.
Yeah.
But that's the joke, okay. See?
Yeah. If you have to explain a joke, it's not funny, Si, but we thought we needed to anyway. Right, this week's photo, well, you can probably guess which one we're going to use for this week's caption competition. It is, of course, Liam Slock flying through the air to win his first ever pro race at the Grand Prix Gippingen. I will get you started. Liam Slock is not just in the form of his life, Si. He is flying. I've got more.
Go on.
If only I rode for Red Bull.
See what he did there?
Yeah. That's, well.
Go on.
Oh, look, a penny. Remember we used to get that at the start of GCN all the time?
Yeah, weird. Every what happened to a look a penny?
Yeah, anyway, there
maybe
we go.
Maybe we just choose better caption photos now.
Probably, yeah. We just probably always used to use crash ones.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. I mean, it's lucky that he was okay after all that, isn't it?
I know.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have been able to use that photo.
When you see the photos we showed at the start, he's lucky he didn't break a collarbone, the way he put his arm down to break the fall.
Have you seen the post going viral, mildly viral on Instagram, of him in all sorts of poses?
Oh, yes.
In all sorts of situations, rather. Same pose, breakdancing.
From the Lotto Antimarché official account, that was.
Is that what,
I don't know if they made
from?
It, but they certainly used it anyway.
Yeah, nice.
Fantastic stuff. Right, put your captions in the comment section down below. We'll pick a winner next week. You know the drill. We'll shortly let you know what's coming up on the channel this week. But first up, some comments from last week's videos. Last week's show, of course, about Lael Wilcox's around the world record. Brian P. Mack said, Lael didn't wait around for other people either. This in reference to Mark Beaumont not waiting for you, Si. There were nearly 100 people there to see her off at 4 a.m. The traffic light changed while everyone was crossing Lakeshore Drive, and about 2/3 of the group didn't cross in time. Lael took off without them. Of the group that did make it across the road, only 8 of us remained after 75k. It was a fantastic day on the bike.
To be fair, I wouldn't wait either if I was Lael.
No,
can you imagine missing
not.
Out on the record because you
not.
Waited for a bunch of people that were very kind to come and see you off? Yeah. But even so, I suspect all the people that got left behind were probably quite okay with that.
I feel very, very slightly bad for leaving them behind, but I would be assuming that they would understand why I didn't really want to wait.
Indeed, yeah. Right then, Bitya Pina. I think, is that how we say it?
I reckon so.
Go, Lael, go. She's a badass. If anyone can do it, it's her. She's such an inspiration both on and off the bike,
isn't she?
Yeah.
Mark J. Thompson, Lego road bike. Oh, yes. I got one for my birthday the other day and I've started the build. That's a very good point. Where is that Lego?
Oh, I don't know.
I'd forgotten about it until the reminder just
then. Yeah, no, I have
seems
as well.
Seems to have gone missing.
Gosh, yeah. Emil from Copenhagen. Probably, so I'm assuming he's from Copenhagen. His username is Emil Copenhagen. Sorry, Dan, but you do say vinegar the wrong way. You tend to say vinya instead of vinger, which is like wing in English. the ing sound anyway, but obviously with a V. So vinegar, the last syllable is a very short vowel with an accent to it. So okay. Vinegar.
All right, hopefully you're watching and or listening, Emil. Vinegar.
Vingegaard.
I feel I'm quite happy with that. That Vingegaard. Sounded about what I've been told to say. Vingegaard.
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 Right. I mean, that's going to go out as a gift somewhere, isn't it? Right, thanks anyway for the pronunciation. We always like to try to pronounce names correctly. Under this session is so good it blew my mind. This is Si looking into the micro intervals that proved so successful for his win.
So successful.
Let's be reminded.
Instrumental.
Seven gravel.
Not going from 6 hours a week to 12 hours a week.
Yeah, yeah, it wasn't that. Max Zulauf, what a missed chance to keep the video on 30 minutes and 15 seconds in length. Very good point.
Yeah.
Was it just a bit longer than that?
Yeah, it was, yeah. Didn't even think about that. No. Yeah, shame. John Lee said, I've been doing 30-15s for a while now. 30 minutes of riding, 15 almond croissant.
Yeah, I like that. Grum Beer Bauer, nothing makes your life feel longer than a five-minute interval. Very true, that. I think that every week when I'm doing VO2 max intervals with Lorraine on Zwift on a Thursday.
Indeed.
I always wonder, you know, VO2 max intervals apparently make you live longer, but I would just wonder whether you feel like you're living longer because you're doing VO2 max intervals.
Pretty much. Dean Woolnough says, I hope GCN and Cy could create this workout on Zwift for others to follow along with
suggestion.
It. Yeah, I have actually suggested it to Zwift. You can obviously make it yourself using the workout creator tool, but I would avoid sticking it on
Erg mode,
thank you. Because I think that would be utterly, utterly savage. Mm. So definitely freestyle it. But yeah. But yeah, I think it would be absolutely brilliant to do it on an indoor platform like Zwift. Can I just say, by the way, there were a few people there saying like, oh my goodness, GTN, you've gone from saying intervals are amazing to zone two is amazing to back to intervals are amazing. Can I just say, like, if you are training properly, then you need to do it all, right? I'm not saying that this is like the only training session you should ever do, but I'm just saying that it's a really amazing training session to do, and it's arguably better than the other high-intensity interval training sessions that you can do. That's
sound
kind of what
potent.
I'm saying.
Yeah. Under beginner versus e-gravel bike, is this the answer? This is my ride with Lorraine around the New Forest. Elementary, my dear Watson, put, after the helmet was given a micro-adjustment of 180 degrees. This is, of course, Lorraine putting a helmet on back to front at the cafe stop. Turned 65 this year, and the call of the e-bike is getting louder, especially to help in keeping up with all the young whippersnappers in the group. And by that, I mean the 50-plus-year-old riders. Another inspirational, quite wonderful GCN video. Thanks to Dan et al.
Yeah, I mean, it was an absolute banger, that, wasn't it? And, I mean, made all the best. Lorraine putting her helmet on back to front. Terra Ryder said, being from Canada, the Canadian Memorial was an awesome touch, and loved the Gates jokes. Yeah.
OCDs, videos like this are wonderful, remind me that e-bikes can be used for good. This video and the videos of Hank and his dad really matter to me. When Lorraine and Dan decided to go the long way round, I was nodding my head and smiling, thinking this is what it's all about. Also, let me express my appreciation of your stop at the Canadian Memorial. Though I'm not Canadian, I know so many gave so very much.
Mm. That's cool. Can I, like, I mean, e-bikes, not that can be used for good, e-bikes are good.
I did try to explain this in the video. There are an unbelievable number of e-bike haters still.
Mm. Yeah. I think e-bikes need a new name.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
Assisted bikes, maybe. Well, we'll come up with that another time. So.
Yeah, maybe not for now.
Can I just also point out that, well, there's a few people in the comments said, you called it the French Channel. Are we getting all woke here? And I just made a genuine mistake when I was talking about Canadian Memorial to the French Channel instead of the English. Which wasn't the best mistake I've ever made, I must admit. So apologies if you were offended.
Sorry. I mean, I shouldn't laugh, but that is quite funny. Right, and then I've been was looking forward to the comments under this one ever since we did the race, basically. Can Dan win his first race in 19 years? You guys did not disappoint. Lorenzo Big Guy said, refers to Alex Payton's description of Ollie as being the best cyclist on his street. He said, I know people that live on Ollie Street. There's some people who aren't happy with this. There's going to be trouble when that kid gets his stabilisers taken off.
Ferdak Game, it's nice to see how much a healthy diet, gym work, friends and a motor in your front wheel can make a difference. Go, Dan.
It's your durability, isn't it, mate?
Yeah.
Paid dividends. And then Zoom Winflow said, you've made some superb videos recently. This might be the best. Excellent.
Yeah. Lots of people were loving Alex's pre-race briefing and how much he was encouraging you and everyone else actually during the race.
Yeah, he absolutely flipping loved it. A little bit of controversy about what we were doing in a third and fourth cat race. Mm. But can I just stress that we are actually all third cats and you're a fourth cat.
Well, I was a fourth and then they realised that I shouldn't be fourth because I've been an elite in the past.
Yeah.
But I'm a third.
Yeah. So we are third cat
but
riders.
Rapidly moving towards second, aren't we, really?
Well,
except
yeah.
Ollie didn't pick up any points.
Well, <I'm> but yeah, I think people, most people were sort of happy to see us there.
Well, I think so. I mean, I'll take people's points. We won't be going back to do the thirds and fourths, will we? If we do it again, we'll do the elite race.
No, and we didn't get any prize money.
No, there was no prize money either.
So it's not like we stole like bread off someone's table or anything like that. But
exactly.
Anyway. So anyway, there we go.
Right, what's coming up on the channel this week? On Thursday, we're going to let you know when you should upgrade to clipless pedals.
Yeah. Clips versus flats, that one, isn't it? And then on Saturday, another kind of pedal-related thing. We've dived into crank length a couple of times on the channel already, but this time it's in combination with your cleat position. Mm. So midfoot cleat possession with short cranks, is that the answer? And then Sunday, you'll just have to wait and see what that one is.
Mm. Bit of a surprise.
Oh, yes.
Right, time for the end of show nugget. I think Si mentioned earlier on in the show that you lot had been, when I say you lot, I mean the super nerds, had been over to Sweden recently for an event.
Super nerds. We had new aero socks. We had new aero gloves. Ollie was wearing aero arm warmers. Mm. Yeah, we took it to the next level of nerdiness. I won't spoil everything, but essentially, Ollie decided that whilst we were going to ride it together, the last of the super nerds to cross the finish line would have to do a forfeit, which was eat pickled herring, which is Sweden's most notorious export. Mm. The smell is so pungent and rancid that apparently it's illegal to eat this stuff in a public place.
Really?
You're not allowed to take it on an aeroplane or on a bus or on a train. The smell is so rank. Now, we won't show you which of us is eating it, but we should probably show you the clip of Alex beginning to open the tin of the smelliest foodstuff on the planet. Here you go.
That is foul.
That's all right.
Fine, you can eat the first dibs for you then. That's not quite nice,
actually. You're going to try it though, aren't you?
Am I getting whiffs of dog turd?
It smells like dog.
We haven't bought a can of dog turd, have we?
Oh,
it's
is. Getting
worse.
It is turdy.
It smells like...
Oh, my God, how is that food stuff?
It smells like fermented fried dog turd.
What?
Look, shut up, I'm getting over my hands.
Dog fried in...
I've got the Swedish name for it now. Surströmming.
It's also not pickled, it's rotten.
Rotten.
We've just discovered, haven't we?
Ah, yeah. Anyway, that video will be coming out for you very soon indeed.
Well, I bet you can't wait for that.
Yeah. All right then, I think that's probably the end of today's show, isn't it?
Yeah, it's been a long one. Hope you got through to the end. Well done if you have. See you next week.
19 people these days, we reckon?
I think it's up to 20.
Let us know if you're here.